Chapter 38. But see what she implied to me. I distinctly understood from her that the answer would be favorable. Apostrophe, apostrophe, so did I, apostrophe, apostrophe, so does he. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and he is sure to be the one who gets it, since only one of us can. Well, I wouldn't marry her for love, money, nor apostrophe, offspring. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exactly. I would not. LL give you an answer in a month to all three of us. For God's sake, let's sit down here and have something to drink. Apostrophe, apostrophe, they drew up a couple of chairs to one of the tables of a wine shop close by and shouted to the waiter with the vigor of persons going to the dogs. Here, behind the horizontal-headed trees that dotted this part of the quay, they sat over their bottles denouncing womankind till the sun got low down upon the river, and the houses on the further side began to be toned by a blue mist. At last they rose from their seats and departed, they to dine and consider his route, and Lady Well to take the train for deep. While these incidents had been in progress, the two workmen had found their way into the hotel where Ethelberta was staying. Passing through the entrance, they stood at gaze in the court, much perplexed as to the door to be made for. The difficulty was solved by the appearance of Cornelia, who in expectation of them had been for the last half hour leaning over the sill of her bedroom window, which looked into the interior, amusing herself by watching the movements to and fro in the court beneath. After conversing a while in undertones, as if they had no real right there at all, Cornelia told them she would call their sister, if an old gentleman who had been to see her were gone again. Cornelia then ran away, and Sol and Dan stood aloof, till they had seen the old gentleman alluded to go to the door and drive off, shortly after which Ethelberta ran down to meet them. Whatever have you got as your luggage? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said, after hearing a few words about their journey, and looking at a curious object like a huge extended accordion with billows of gorgeous patterned carpeting. Well, I thought to myself, apostrophe, said Sol, 'tis a terrible bother about carrying our things. So what did I do, but turn to and make a carpet back that would hold all mine and Dan's too. This, you see, Berta, is a deal top and bottom out of three-quarter stuff, stained and varnished. Well, then you see I've got carpet sides tacked on with these brass nails, which make it look very handsome. And so when my bag is empty, 'twill shut up, and be only a couple of boards under your arm, and when 'tis open it will hold amost anything you like to put in it. That portmantle didn't cost more than 3 half-crowns altogether, and £10 wouldn't ha' got anything so strong from a portmantle maker, would it, Dan? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, and then you see, Berta, apostrophe, Sol continued in the same earnest tone, and further exhibiting the article, I've made this trapdoor in the top with hinges and padlock complete, so that apostrophe, I am afraid it is tiring you after your journey, to explain all this to me, apostrophe, said Ethelberta gently, noticing that a few Gallic smilers were gathering round. Aunt has found a nice room for you at the top of the staircase in that corner scalier D you'll see painted at the bottom, and when you have been up come across to me at number 34 on this side, and we'll talk about everything. Apostrophe, apostrophe, look here, Sol, apostrophe, said Dan, who had left his brother and gone onto the stairs. What a rum staircase, the treads all in little blocks, and painted chocolate, as I am alive. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I am afraid I shall not be able to go on to Paris with you, after all, apostrophe, Ethelberta continued to Sol. Something has just happened which makes it desirable for me to return at once to England. But I will write a list of all you are to see, and where you are to go, so that it will make little difference, I hope. Apostrophe, apostrophe, 10 minutes before this time Ethelberta had been frankly and earnestly asked by Lord Mountclere to become his bride. Not only so, but he pressed her to consent to have the ceremony performed before they returned to England. Ethelberta had unquestionably been much surprised, and, Barring the fact that the Viscount was somewhat ancient in comparison with herself, the temptation to close with his offer was strong, and would have been felt as such by any woman in the position of Ethelberta, now a little reckless by stress of circumstances, and tinged with a bitterness of spirit against herself and the world generally. But she was experienced enough to know what heaviness might result from a hasty marriage, entered into with a mind full of concealments and suppressions which, if told, were likely to stop the marriage altogether, and after trying to bring herself to speak of her family and situation to Lord Mountclair as he stood, a certain caution triumphed, and she concluded that it would be better to postpone her reply till she could consider which of two courses it would be advisable to adopt, to write and explain to him, or to explain nothing and refuse him. The third course, to explain nothing, and hasten the wedding, she rejected without hesitation. With a pervading sense of her own obligations in forming this compact, it did not occur to her to ask if Lord Mountclair might not have duties of explanation equally with herself, though bearing rather on the moral than the social aspects of the case. Her resolution not to go on to Paris was formed simply because Lord Mountclair himself was proceeding in that direction, which might lead to other unseemly encounters with him had she too persevered in her journey. She accordingly gave Sol and Dan directions for their guidance to Paris and back, starting herself with Cornelia the next day, to return again to Nulcia, and to decide finally and forever what to do in the vexed question at present agitating her. Never before in her life had she treated marriage in such a terribly cool and cynical spirit as he had done that day. She was almost frightened at herself in thinking of it. How far any known system of ethics might excuse her on the score of those curious pressures which had been brought to bear upon her life, or whether it could excuse her at all, as he had no spirit to inquire. English society appeared a gloomy concretion enough to abide in as she contemplated it on this journey home. Yet, since its gloominess was less an essential quality than an accident of her point of view, that point of view as he had determined to change, there lay open to her two directions in which to move. She might annex herself to the easy-going high by wedding an old nobleman, or she might join for good and all the easy-going low by plunging back to the level of her family, giving up all her ambitions for them, settling as the wife of a provincial music master named Julian, with a little shop of fiddles and flutes, a couple of old pianos, a few sheets of stale music pinned to a string, and a narrow back parlor, wherein she would wait for the phenomenon of a customer. And each of these divergent proofs had its fascinations, till she reflected with regard to the first that, even though she were a legal and indisputable Lady Mountclair, she might be despised by my lord's circle, and left lone and lorn. The intermediate path of accepting nay or Lady Well had no more attractions for her taste than the fact of disappointing them had qualms for her conscience. And how few these were, may be inferred from her opinion, true or false, that two words about the spigot on her escutcheon would sweep her lover's affections to the antipodes. As he had now and then imagined that her previous intermarriage with the Peter Wynne family might efface much besides her surname, but experience proved that the having been wife for a few weeks to a minor who died in his father's lifetime did not weave such a tissue of glory about her course as would resist a speedy undoing by startling confessions on her station before her marriage and her environments now. 36. The house in town, returning by way of Nulcia, where she remained a week or two, Ethelberta appeared one evening at the end of September before her house in Exonbury Crescent, accompanied by a pair of cabs with the children and luggage. But Picotee was left at Nulcia, for reasons which Ethelberta explained, when the family assembled in conclave. Her father was there, and began telling her of a surprising change in men of an unasked for concession to their cause, and a vow of secrecy which he could not account for, unless any friend of Ethelberta's had bribed her. "Oh no, that cannot be," apostrophe said she. Any influence of Lord Mountclair to that effect was the last thing that could enter her thoughts. However, what Menlof does makes little difference to me now. And she proceeded to state that as he had almost come to a decision which would entirely alter their way of living. I hope it will not be of the sort your last decision was, said her mother. No, quite the reverse. I shall not live here in state any longer. We will let the house throughout as lodgings, while it is ours, and you and the girls must manage it. I will retire from the scene altogether, and stay for the winter at Nulcia with Piketty. I want to consider my plans for next year, and I would rather be away from town. Piketty is left there, and I return in 2 days with the books and papers I require. What are your plans to be? I am going to be a schoolmistress, I think I am. A schoolmistress? Yes. And Piketty returns to the same occupation, which she ought never to have forsaken. We are going to study arithmetic and geography until Christmas. Then I shall send her adrift to finish her term as pupil teacher, while I go into a training school. By the time I have to give up this house, I shall just have got a little country school. Said her mother, aghast, why not write more poems and sell them? Why not be a governess as you were? Said her father. Why not go on with your tales at Mayfair Hall? Said Gwendoline. I'll answer as well as I can. I have decided to give up romancing, because I cannot think of any more that pleases me. I have been trying at Nulcia for a fortnight, and it is no use. I will never be a governess again. I would rather be a servant. If I am a schoolmistress, I shall be entirely free from all contact with the great, which is what I desire, for I hate them, and am getting almost as revolutionary as Soul. Father, I cannot endure this kind of existence any longer. I sleep at night, as if I had committed a murder. I start up, and see processions of people, audiences, battalions of lovers obtained under false pretenses all denouncing me with the finger of ridicule. Mother's suggestion about my marrying I followed out as far as dogged resolution would carry me, but during my journey here I have broken down. For I don't want to marry a second time among people who would regard me as an upstart or intruder. I am sick of ambition. My only longing now is to fly from society altogether, and go to any hovel on earth, where I could be at peace. What has anybody been insulting you? Said Mrs. Chickerell. Yes, or rather I sometimes think he may have. That is, if a proposal of marriage is only removed from being a proposal of a very different kind by an accident. A proposal of marriage can never be an insult, her mother returned. I think otherwise, said Ethelberta. So do I, said her father. Unless the man was beneath you, and I don't suppose he was that, added Mrs. Chickerell. You are quite right, he was not that. But we will not talk of this branch of the subject. By far the most serious concern with me is that I ought to do some good by marriage, or by heroic performance of some kind, while going back to give the rudiments of education to remote amateurs will do none of you any good whatever. Never you mind us, said her father, mind yourself. I shall hardly be minding myself either, in your opinion, by doing that, said Ethelberta dryly. But it will be more tolerable than what I am doing now. Georgina, and Myrtle, and Emmeline, and Joey will not get the education I intended for them, but that must go, I suppose. How full of vagaries you are, said her mother. Why won't it do to continue as you are? No sooner have I learned up your schemes, and got enough used to them to see something in them, than you must needs bewilder me again, by starting some fresh one, so that my mind gets no rest at all. Apostrophe apostrophe, Ethelberta too keenly felt the justice of this remark, querulous as it was, to care to defend herself. It was hopeless to attempt to explain to her mother that the oscillations of her mind might arise as naturally from the perfection of its balance, like those of a Logan stone, as from inherent lightness. And such an explanation, however comforting to its subject, was little better than none to simple hearts who only could look to tangible outcrops. Really, Ethelberta, apostrophe remonstrated her mother, this is very odd. Making yourself miserable in trying to get a position on our account is one thing, and not necessary, but I think it ridiculous to rush into the other extreme and go willfully down in the scale. You may just as well exercise your wits in trying to swim as in trying to sink. Apostrophe apostrophe, yes, that's what I think, apostrophe said her father. But of course Berta knows best. Apostrophe apostrophe, I think so too, apostrophe said Gwendoline. And so do I, apostrophe said Cornelia. If I had once moved about in large circles like Ethelberta, I wouldn't go down and be a schoolmistress, not I, apostrophe apostrophe, I own it is foolish, suppose it is, apostrophe said Ethelberta wearily, and with a readiness of misgiving that showed how recent and hasty was the scheme. Perhaps you are right, mother, anything rather than retreat. I wonder if you are right. Well, I will think again of it tonight. Do not let us speak more about it now. Apostrophe, she did think of it that night, very long and painfully. The arguments of her relative seemed ponderous as opposed to her own inconsequent longing for escape from galling trammels. If S.E. had stood alone, the sentiment that S.E. had begun to build, but was not able to finish, by whomsoever it might have been entertained, would have had few terrors. But that the opinion should be held by her nearest of kin, to cause them pain for life, was a grievous thing. The more she thought of it, the less easy seemed the justification of her desire for obscurity. From regarding it as a high instinct, she passed into a humor that gave that desire the appearance of a whim. But could she really set in train events, which, if not abortive, would take her to the altar with Viscount Mountclair? In one determination she never faltered, to commit her sin thoroughly, if she committed it at all. Her relatives believed her choice to lie between they and Lady Well alone. But once having decided to pass over Christopher, whom as he had loved, there could be Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.